Yeah, Brian, my husband, I left him for a second. I came back and he had spent a few hundred dollars on this wonderful Gandalf piece of art. And he texted me and I just left. He goes, I don't care what you say. I just bought this Gandalf. It's never made me, I've never been so happy in my life. And I'm looking at the text. And then I swear, 3 seconds later, there's another text, except the day when I married you. That was good too. You know?
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we cover everything from the backbends to the big screens that involve comic books. Man, we got a lot of great comic book news. We got trailers to talk about today. We got San Diego Comic-Con and a superstar interviewer, none other than Audrey Kearns from Boos and Phasers is joining us today. Let me quickly do the introductions. We've got the Dragon Con of Cons, Brian Ibbett.
Hi. I'm hot, sweaty, and apparently full of cosplay.
Oh, then I guess we can bump this one up. We've got the San Diego Comic-Con of Cons, Audrey Kearns.
Hello, everyone.
She's also patient zero if she sat next to Claudia Dolph for too long, apparently.
Oh, we've all got like con plague right now.
Yeah. Then we got the Minnesota Renfest of people, Chris Wisdom.
Oh, come on. I'm at least Planet Comic Con.
And then we got the New Media Expo of Cons, Paul Klotz.
Wow. Nice. Oh, man. I don't think our listeners are going to understand exactly what you just said there, but wow.
You know, it's one of those days. I just throw things out, is what I do. So, all right. So. All right, I want to quickly introduce Audrey, who is, this is her first appearance on this show. Yes. She and her awesome cohorts, Heather Brooker and Claudia Dolph, are the amazing hosts of Boos and Phasers.
Yay.
Which is, God, that is such a fun, amazing show. And you are the newest members of the, that's the wrong nation there, of the Giant Size Team Up.
Yes, which we're very, very excited about.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you guys.
Yeah, we're stoked.
I can tell. That was great.
We're showing right now.
It is glowing.
Klotz is just disappointed because he knows for everybody in the network, we get a percentage of what you make, and we have yet to get our percentage of vodka from the company.
Yeah, where's the creative booze?
It's in my belly.
And the freezer.
The freezer. okay. He wants either a phaser or a booze, either way.
I have two phasers, but I don't know. I love them. One's like a real, well, it's not a real phaser, obviously, but one's like this little plastic one that may break. Maybe you can have that one, but my metal one.
That's for keeps. I understand. Yeah.
Well, you know where you might could find a phaser, Klotz?
Maybe.
I cannot guarantee this, but you might find a phaser in Loot Crate. Uh-huh. When it comes each way. I thought you were going to work and find one.
No, I was like, oh, yeah. I was thinking, where is he going with this? But yeah.
You can. Loot Crate puts out some great stuff. You actually never know what you're going to get in the box for less than $20 a month. You get 6 to 8 items that include some really awesome stuff. So this month, August, is bad guys doing good things for the wrong reasons, or good guys doing questionable things, or stuff that people just don't understand. It's the anti-hero, which is my favorite kind of hero. Walk the hero villain line with this 100% exclusive collection from items from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, Kill Bill, and two great collectibles, so on and so forth. Now, Ibbett, you said there's more stuff. There's a game in this box this month, right?
That's right. Not just any game, but a game that has sucked the lives away of so many great people. Mila Kunis played it and had to stop because she was running out of time to do movies. But World of Warcraft, you're going to get a free digital download of not only the base vanilla game, but all of the expansions. Of course, not including Legion, which comes out next month, but you get all the expansions and 30 days of playtime, all free digital download with your Loot Crate purchase.
So that is awesome. Go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and put in code giant-size-team-up to save $3 and order your box today. It's going to help us out. We really would appreciate it. So for the first story, now I started watching some of the coverage of Comic-Con, and I got to say, Audrey, there are some people in our network, Giant Size Team Up, who are very jealous because they've been asking their fans to help them get to San Diego Comic-Con, and they go, wait, some of our fellow hosts are there, and I'm asking my fans? I'm like, yeah.
We were all there.
Yeah, whole entire crew, man. That was awesome. Yeah.
Well, we can, you guys can too. You can get professional badges, but I guess it's just a matter, since I'm just only a couple hours away, it's easy for me to drive down there. I took the train actually for the first time this year, which was crazy. It was so packed that some people stood for 3 hours on the train.
Wow.
Yeah, just to get to, they call it the conductor. I don't know if they call them conductors now. Was just like, okay, it's a Comic-Con train. It was like 11 in the morning. Everyone's drinking. The bar car is full. It's like the party started in LA at Union Station. It was insane.
Was this the train that actually was decked out by Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the outside with the Ghost Rider chain?
Those are the
Mass
San Diego. Yeah, the Mass. Thank you, Mass Transit.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. They have so many of those, and they always look super sharp and cool. Yeah.
Wow. Do you get a lot of people on the train for 3 hours in their cosplay, or do they wait until
No. There was one guy, though. No, everyone's in their geeky T-shirts. Everyone's really chattery and having fun. And when we get off the train, we turn around, and this guy who hadn't been dressed like this before had pulled on a Deadpool mask and put his clothes over it. So he was just Deadpool on a train, and he was sitting in the back, so nobody's facing him. So everybody gets up, turns around to leave, and there's Deadpool on a train just sitting in the back. And it was like, let's begin.
Stealthy,
started.
Right.
It was fantastic.
That is awesome. So how hard was it to get a professional badge? I mean,
it's not hard at all. It's harder now than it was, say, years ago when I started going. Well, you guys would need to do is go to Comic-Con International and fill out a professional submission form. And then they'll get back to you and let you know if you've been accepted as a trade professional or as I forget what the other professional is, which you guys should be. The trade professionals are mainly like managers and agents and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You guys, I would assume, would be granted professional status, and then you get your badge for free. But the thing is now, which used to be no problem at all, you could get like up to four others. So every year we got like five badges, and it's so packed now that you get yours, but you may have to pay for your guests. You don't get any freebies. You go into a lottery to get the freebies, and if you don't win that lottery, then you have to buy a guest pass for yourself for $200 and still be able to skip the massive lottery. So luckily Brian and I got our regular badges, and we didn't have anybody to bring this year, so we didn't have to go in that lottery or anything. But yeah, I mean, but more and more, since there are more content creators out there now, mm-hmm. That are considered professionals, it's starting to get really tight, even for San Diego Comic-Con.
How bad. And I know Dragon Con has tightened down as well, and it's a much smaller con.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, everybody I know that was a professional still got in. So, but okay. I'm wondering if, like, over the next few years, if we're going to have to do a professional lottery as well. And you can also try to get a press badge and do go that way.
Oh,
as
yeah,
well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All right, well, I'm sure we're going to have more questions about that, but the one piece of news that really grabbed my attention, because it came out on Instagram, of all things, but Robbie Ray's Ghost Rider joins Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I had to Google Robbie Ray's. I was not familiar with that Ghost Rider, but this is a Ghost Rider with a car, which doesn't quite make sense to me, but I'm sure it'll actually be fun. Yeah, I know, right? We've had like four Ghost Riders with motorcycles. Why are you picking the one with the car?
He's working on getting his motorcycle license, but there's so many tests and so many things we have to go through to get.
It's dangerous, guys. You know, you got to take a test for that. And the insurance is different. Come on.
That's right. So what do we know about what else do we know about Robbie Reyes? Is this is he still kind of like the?
And I'm not. I haven't been following modern Ghost Rider too much. I know I first ran into him in the Secret Wars Ghost Riders comic, and I really kind of like him. So I don't know where he was in continuity prior to Secret Wars and afterwards, but he's got a little brother, and they did a different thing with the Spirits of Vengeance in that Secret Wars little 4-issue tie-in. It was just really good. Yeah, I would suggest you guys check it out. He's kind of still a cool character.
He still leans chaotic good, right? I mean, okay, good.
Yeah,
fighting on the right side of the law.
Yeah, and he's not as dark as the other Spirits of Vengeance because they've all had time to, you know, kind of adjust to being the Ghost Rider, and he still kind of seems hopeful, and he's always his little brother's always forefront in his mind. What he does for his little brother. So.
Which seems to go with like the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, and even including on the TV, it seems to be a little more aspirational. So it makes sense that they wouldn't go for like a super dark, dark one. Anyway.
Yeah, because you need somebody who's willing to join a team, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Since he's got a car, he can also give people a ride. A ride to work, or you know,
he can't be such a loner. He can't be such
exactly.
a loner.
Yeah.
Next spring from Marvel Comics, Ghost Ride Along.
Great, I can take the HOV lane. Fantastic. Are they? And so, how are we thinking they're going to pull off the flaming head? Because that's kind of the trademark look. And I remember TV, you know, the suits being really worried about even having Human Torch in the old Fantastic Four cartoon because they were worried about kids trying to emulate the appearance and replaced him with Herbie. Yeah. So it's going to be a great special effect if they can pull it off.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
well,
get
and
the budget
they had the teaser trailer that showed all right. It seemed a little too digital, like almost like it reminded me of Green Lantern, the animated series. Not necessarily the roundedness, but I mean that quality of animation that it's really like top notch animation, but just below realistic looking. But then, I mean, last season we had, what was his name? Inferno? Not Inferno, but the...
Hellfire.
Yeah, that dude. And when they did his fire effects, those all seemed really, really
of
good.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, right. All right. Okay. So they've set precedence for this. Cool.
Now, every time I open up a tab to try to look at the wiki or look at this news story, my connection to you guys goes nuts. Like, you still talk, and you obviously are hearing each other, but I get a lot of digital mess, so I can't look up the wiki right now. But what I remember when I read it, because I had looked him up, was the car is possessed by the spirit. He ends up trying to do something to do with a gang. I can't remember if he's street racing. He ends up dying in the car, and the spirit's like, hey, I can help you with that. And then they go and beat up the gang and kill everybody. And it's still Ghost Rider. I mean, it's still very violent and very brutal, as Punisher style brutality. But I think that's probably going to be watered down a lot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That makes a Secret Wars storyline make more sense then, because they did explore that the Spirit of Vengeance was separate. It didn't, and all the other Ghost Riders, he is the Spirit of Vengeance, but it's in Reyes's mind, it's like there's Reyes talking and he talks to the Spirit of Vengeance. So they work together as like a team. So that makes more sense.
Yeah. And that's the first time I've heard of one actually dying, right? Because usually it was some kind of pact to keep from dying before. And he actually, according to the wiki, he actually died while in this car, whatever. He was being chased by what he thought were the police in a car race. And when he finally stopped, it was actually some gang and they killed him and stole a car. I believe is how that went down. And then the Spirit of Vengeance was like, hey, let's go kill some people together. And so they did.
They had the car at SDCC.
I saw that on Instagram. Yeah. That looked awesome.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Did you get to touch it?
I walked by it and looked at it and said, wow. I didn't touch it, though.
Did you ask it for an interview?
It to me. I think I got confused with Kit. I was like, well,
I just want to know if we're going to be taking these subtle digs the whole show, just to remind us that someone was at San Diego Comic-Con.
Any chance I can think of one, I'm going to cover it.
I saw that.
I just can't believe you've already tweeted us all pictures of your badge. Okay, we get it already.
why aren't we doing video too? I could just have it on my badge. Hey, you want to see the picture of me and Stephen Moffat? I can show you.
We're getting to that. We're getting to that. So we're actually probably going to have more of a freeform show today than the segments we normally do, because I'm ready to jump into some of your experiences. Now, I am a faithful listener to Booze and Phasers because I was a fan before we signed it on here. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great thing. And so, yeah, I heard about all your preparation. I heard about everything you're going down, and you weren't even sure how you were going to get into the Star Trek screening. Of course, they screened it there.
Yeah.
Opening night. And I love your world, because you're just like, well, we can get free tickets this way or we can get free tickets that way. It's never, I want to stand in line and spend $200 on tickets to get to the movie. It was, no, we're going to get them free. And how did that end up working out? One way was to meet and stand in line for a long time. And then I think you did something different.
Well, I got lucky, basically, you know, and I'll be the first to admit I've become jaded, where I've been going to Comic-Con for 10 years. So I don't really like to stand in lines anymore, you know, because they are pretty insane. Mm-hmm. And so we couldn't get them through my husband's agent, and we couldn't get them through press. We're not big enough, you know, Geek Girl Authority and Booze and Phasers wasn't big enough to get tickets. So I'm like, F it, I'm not gonna do it. The other way was to stand in line at 11 in the morning and go into a lottery system, right? And I knew those were gonna go, and we weren't leaving LA till 11. So preview night is Wednesday, which is also when the world premiere is. And Brian, my husband, and I were going to go to the floor. And that was the only day we're going to do the con floor. We're going to do all of our shopping then before all the crowds came and everything. So we're taking the shuttle bus to the con floor. And I get this text. Did you listen to the Booze and Phasers with Mike McCafferty?
Yes.
Okay, so he texts me, and I just met him that day for that podcast.
Hold on a second. By the way, Mike McCafferty, this is the interesting connections all the world has. Yeah. So Chris Wisdom works with us now and is on the show now because he bugged the crap out of the guys at the Secret Stash, which is Kevin Smith's store, comic book store, so that we could get an interview with some of the guys there. And, you know, he just has that real go-getting thing. Mike McCafferty is one of the, I didn't quite catch what he does, but he works with Fat Man on Batman, the live show, right?
Oh, no, that's Matt Key. That was the other guest.
Matt Key. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, he stumbled into a job where he's producing Fat Man on Batman right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that, okay, yeah. So he was Jay's personal assistant for a while.
Yeah.
And now he's producing from Kevin Smith. Like, it's a small world. Then, man. That's crazy.
This is not me, and I didn't meet any of those people. He stumbled into this thing, and then he got called right before Comic-Con to write all of John Barrowman's jokes for the Eisner Award. And so all those costume pictures that are going around with him as Squirrel Girl, and because he kept changing costumes, that was all Matt's idea. And the producers are like, Barrowman's not going to want to do it. And Matt's like, I don't think you guys know Barrowman very well.
Yeah, are you kidding?
Know his con persona. He's going to want to do this. And so, yeah, so he sat down and had lunch with Barrowman and went over jokes and stuff. It was like, oh, my God. But no, the guy from the week before, Mike McCafferty, he does a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, and it's about his midlife crisis and wanting to be Kirk, and it's very funny. So I just met him that one time, and we're on the shuttle, and he texts me because I did a Star Trek trivia show with him as well, and he texts me, he said, hey, I'm at the Star Trek premiere right now, and I have two extra tickets. Are you guys around?
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's literally what happened. And I'm like, where are you? What do we do? What do we have to do? Because we had just arrived at the convention center, so we weren't that far. So Brian and I ran, and we're not in shape. We ran all the way around the convention center, which is huge, to buy the it's right, the Embarcadero, which is right by the water. And he kind of illegally, like, gave me my tickets through a fence while nobody was looking, because it was a different entrance than what other people were entering. And we got in. And it was 6 o'clock. And I looked. I was like, oh, my God, the sun doesn't set till 9. So I knew that it was going to be a long time. But that's how we got in, just by happening to be in the right place at the right time and Mike thinking of me and texting me.
It's because you went and helped him take second place in the Star Trek trivia.
It is. We came through trivia night, you know. So, yeah. So that was, we had a super fun night, which I guess I could tell you more about it later in the podcast. But it was, but that's how I got in.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. It was, oh my God. It was great.
This is where you guys can jump in and ask questions.
Look, I've spent my whole life not being at the cool table. I don't need it brought onto the show, too.
Well, you have to understand, it's like this is the first, last 5 years, this is the first time in my life where I can go do things that I love and they're actually cool. Right. You know, I'm never at the cool table.
So. No. Right. Now, the whole point of bringing Audrey on is to show, not that, Chris, you're not at the cool table, it's to show you are at the cool table now. We're all mutual hosts on Giant Size Team Up Network, and this is what we're doing now. And even if we'd all gotten free tickets to San Diego Comic-Con, other than Ibbit, I don't know that any of us could have gone for flights and hotels and work and all that jazz.
And that makes all the difference. I mean, that's why when you go there, I'd say half the people are from Southern California or from the Southeast states, people that could drive in. There's a lot of international visitors and national visitors as well. But, I mean, that's why those trains are so packed from L.A. to San Diego, and the road going from LA to San Diego, it's usually 1.5 hour, 2 hour drive. It takes 4.5 hours to get there by car. Comic Con weekend.
I would be hard pressed to not go if I had free tickets. Because I'll just
So what's worse, Chris, is I have a bunch of different friends that play on this level, and I follow them all on Instagram, and I'm watching. There's at least four different groups of people. There's Booze and Phasers that I'm watching that are there. There's Scott Sigler, who's a friend of mine. I think he's a friend of yours too, Brian, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Friend there. He's there with A, and I'm seeing his photos. There's a friend of mine, Chris Anita Pack, who does the Geeky Awards. She's there.
Oh, yeah, I know her. Yeah.
You know Chris and Nita Pack?
We've met a couple times. We were nominated for a Geeky Award, Geek Girl Authority, a while ago.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, she's amazing.
She's great. She's great.
Yeah, she is. So I'm watching her do her stuff. I'm like, all these people doing some stuff. Then I see like Sigler and Booze and Phasers are both at the Magician's Party.
Oh, man, that was so freaking fun. It was a sci-fi party and it was ridiculous. I'm talking about and usually you go to these parties and they have open, I don't know if you guys partake in the drinking, but I do.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But, and you know, there's usually open bar and it's just wine and beer and well drinks and stuff like this. But the sci-fi party had like really good whiskey, really good bourbon, fancy stuff all around. There's like a lot of sci-fi stars and I watch a lot of shows on sci-fi. We're all there. And it was really, really cool. That was fun.
Very cool. I was afraid you were just going to a party with a bunch of magicians in there.
That would have been great. It was the magicians meetup. It was just a bunch of men with top hats and rabbits.
All of them asking, is this a card?
I was just going to say that her evening with Stephen Moffat was counterbalanced by Ian Ziering and Tara Reid. But
I know, right? Well, the funny thing is my friend Kai Erickson, who has been in a couple sci-fi movies and was in the 4400, they came to the party later. He's Claudia's boyfriend, and he's friends with the Sharknado director, and they couldn't get in. They were on the list, but it was so crowded that they had already reached maximum capacity. So Kai, I mean, they'd probably deny this, but Kai actually worked his way, because he's a great smooth talker, and was able to get the Sharknado people up. And to little or no thanks from them, by the way, a couple of them. But yeah, it was pretty insane. But I don't know if you guys watched Farscape. That was a big show for me. Gigi Edgley was there.
Yes.
Plays Chiana, who might do Five Truths and Lie at Dragon Con because of that party. And same with one of the guys from Dark Matter. And Rod Roddenberry was there. It was just really cool. It was really neat.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. That's the point, Chris, is to how often do you know somebody who not only gets to go, but does really cool stuff and we get to live vicariously and hear the stories.
Yeah.
Klotz, if you were to go to Dragon Con, what's the one thing? Dragon Con. See, I'm already thinking about September.
That's next month.
If you're going to SDCC, what's the one thing you'd really hope to do or see?
I honestly have no idea. Like, way to, you know, put me in the spotlight there.
Sorry.
I don't know, man. It's like, I think the big thing would be just to, like, because I've never gone, it would be to experience the con itself.
Yeah. Hmm. That makes sense. Cause it's very overwhelming. It's very overwhelming the first time you go, and you do have to decide. You do have to admit to yourself that you're not going to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to decide if you're going to be willing to wait in lines to get into Hall H, or Ballroom 20, or if you want to go to the, some of the smaller panels, you just have to make deals with yourself not to get upset, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to do, because now if you don't have a badge, there's it's almost like a fringe festival. There's stuff going around because the baseball park, Petco Park, is right across the street. So there's installations over there. There's installations all around the place that you can get into without having a con badge. So it's even more crowded than usual. And then there's people from LA, like industry people, that just come down for the parties because they're right. Dorks. SCCC is the one place where, as a dork, I can call someone else a dork that's actually probably sure. was pretty popular in high school or something. I don't know.
Well, you're soon to be friend of mine, Stephen Mel. Actually spent a lot of time over in Petco Park.
Yeah.
I saw a bunch of pictures.
As soon as he answers my emails.
But I did hear you guys talking about Hall H and just the insanity. Did you get to do the Star Trek art, 50 years of art or whatever it was?
I didn't get to do that. Claudia and Heather went, and I was very upset because that's something I wanted to do. But I forget where I was that I wasn't able to get there in time. And then they had the, like, you know, as a girl, they had the whole makeup display too. I thought that'd be pretty interesting. And the line for that was insane. But the Star Trek art display is the one thing that I could have gone to and I didn't. Hmm. And I'm terrible, Trekkie. But Claudia and Heather got lots of nice pictures of it and everything.
So
I wanted to go because the very last, I know the last picture was one done by Leonard Nimoy. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So Audrey, how many years have you been going to?
I'd say about 10 years.
So as a veteran, what do you suggest? Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's like they were saying, like Paul was saying, he just wants to go and experience it. But what,
right.
Why do you say skip the artist alley because there's going to be conventions later on, actual comic book conventions, you can go pick them up later? Do you still try to get into right. into those areas, or?
Well, you can't. It's easy to get into those areas. Yeah. The con floor. So I wouldn't go, if you're a first timer, I wouldn't go unless you had a multi-day badge. Okay. You know, going down for one day is just going to be sad, especially if you just go Saturday. No, if you go Saturday, you'll just walk away disappointed because there was so much more you could have done. Right. The floor is the biggest floor I've ever seen. And Artist Alley is in there. And then, you know, it is true that some people say, I'm just going to, because actually I think in October there's another comic book convention in San Diego that's just comic books. And a lot of people go back for that. But some of the really famous artists come in and you can really get, we've gotten some great art there. And I would definitely say, you know, cut out a few hours of your time to go to the con floor because the installations on the con floor are pretty amazing too. So if you can't get into a panel, say Warner Brothers or DC, like DC had all their signings at their booth on the floor. Mm. So you can stand in line for that, or you can walk by and wave to the cast or at least see what's going on and hear them talk. Mm. You know, you're not going to get the big interview that you would in Hall H, but there's a lot of stuff going on the floor, a lot of amazing booths. Now, as far as the panels, back when I started going, like I was able to walk into a Firefly panel in Hall H, where now you'd have to sleep out for a full night to get people sleep out in line. It's like getting concert tickets in the 80s when I was a kid. And the thing is with Hall H, say it fits 5,000 people. I'm not sure if that's the number, but somewhere along there. If you get in the morning, you don't have to leave after the first panel. You can stay there all day.
They don't clear the room?
They do not
clear the room.
That's their biggest thing. They don't clear the room. So if there's only two panels in Hall H that you want to see, and one's at 3 and one's at 5, you better make sure you can get into that 10 o'clock panel because not many people are going to leave once they fill that hall for the first time. Wow. So that's a big thing to learn about all the panels. That's Ballroom 20. That's any panel that's there.
So, you know, squatters' rights is a thing in San Diego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they give you like if you have to go to the bathroom, they give you a reentry badge and stuff like that. They have little rules and little ways for them to know if you're passing it off and everything like that.
Oh, wow.
And this year was the first year you actually had to actually take, there was a chip in your badge. And now you have to actually, use that to even get in on the con floor. You have to scan your badge because people usually run in and then run out and give their badge to somebody else, and then they come in. So,
oh, geez.
Yeah. George Orwell comes to Comic-Con. What is this?
They're probably taking all our information. They're scanning us.
I'm picturing two things right now. Arnold Schwarzenegger movie on Mars.
Total Recall.
Total Recall. Yeah, I'm picturing the full body X-ray scanners that you walk through to get in. And then I'm picturing, and I know Chris and Klaus will film me on this one too, the robot from RoboCop 2, the big
Ed 209, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I'm picturing that outside of Hall H. Where's your badge? You cannot get back in.
Well, I was really thinking that one part, you know, in Minority Report where he walks through the scanners and it kind of scans him and all his stuff comes up.
Oh, right.
Yes.
You know, like his license and all that kind of stuff. I feel like that's what you're kind of walking through. But another thing is like, we ran into a friend at another party. I won't name drop. They're like, oh, we're going to look on the panel sheet because there are smaller panels that aren't advertised that you're going to see your favorite people on. Like I went to this one panel where it was only 3/4 full and it was a pretty big room. And it was just a small writer's talk with Stephen Moffat, Brian Fuller, and Michael Green. Michael Green's doing American Gods with Brian Fuller. It was just the three of them. And with this girl moderating, asking them questions about writing and stuff. And it was awesome because Brian Fuller kept, you know, the funny thing was, is Brian Fuller, like every 5 minutes was like, to Stephen Moffat, will you write for Star Trek? Will you write for Star Trek? And it became like a running gag, you know? So that was something that, you know, the 5,000 people that went to the Doctor Who panel, you know, didn't see, or that, you know, when Brian Fuller moderated the Star Trek 50th anniversary, you know, they didn't get to see this part of Brian Fuller, you know, so always look for those smaller panels, you know, they're fantastic.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
They may not broadcast who's going to be in them. So you could end up with a jumble.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, I think it's just patient, especially have a multi-pass. If you have a multi-pass, and there's a lot of Lilus there, guys, if you like Lilu, there's a lot of Lilus. Did I say her name right? Is it Lilu? There's so much to do because, like, the first day you get there, it's almost like information overload because there's something all around you, you know. Just know you're not going to be able to do everything and enjoy everything that you do, you know. That's really the best thing.
I saw pictures of Alex Ross's 2-story installation/booth, and I'm pretty sure I would have spent probably 4 hours there.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Grueling. Yeah. Yeah. Brian, my husband, he got lost in the Weta booth, you know, from, you know, and I left him for a second. I came back and he had spent, you know, like a few $100 on this Gandalf, this wonderful Gandalf piece of art. And he texted me and I just left. He goes, I don't care what you say. I just bought this Gandalf. It's never made me, I've never been so happy in my life. And I'm looking at the text. And then I swear, 3 seconds later, there's another text, except the day when I married you. That was good too. You know? You know, but there are, like you said, there are these installations like you would get lost in. And there's, you know, Fear of the Walking Dead story, like Walking Dead stuff, but they also have a maze you can walk through that's underneath the store. You know, it's very fan centric. They're trying to get they're trying to get your money, but they also trying to make you have a good time, you know, and it's fun.
So that, unless you guys got some more questions about that, which we can come back around to, I've got a question for the master interviewer because, at Dragon Con, which is the closest and biggest con that I've been to along these lines, you do see on a much lower level, because I'm sure there's just bajillions of celebrities and stars out there for SDCC. Yeah. It's just such a big deal. But Dragon Con, you'll see some, you know, who'll stay there for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
You know, some fly in and fly out, whatever. I've seen like Carl Urban, you know, pass by. And I always try to be respectful.
Right,
you know, I might
right.
say something like, hey, and I feel bad because I honestly I don't remember the guy's name, but he's a great actor. He was in the J.J. Abrams Fringe. He was the father in Fringe.
Oh, oh, Noble. John Noble.
Oh,
yeah.
He was also in Lord of the Rings. What was he in?
Yes.
He's not Théoden. He's the other kin. He's the other.
They're not Théoden.
He's Faramir and Boromir's dad.
Faramir, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway.
I love his work. I've seen him in many other things.
I saw him at DragonCon, too.
Right. Yeah. I don't know why he's, I'm sure probably for Fringe or something, but, or whatever he's working on now. But he was out with one of his escorts smoking a cigarette. And I just stopped and went, I was like, hey, and I shook his hand, like, I love your work. And he's like, thanks. And I walked away and I went, damn it, I should have asked for a picture, you know, something. Oh, and because nobody was recognizing him. Everybody's just blowing past him. It's at Hyatt where the podcast stuff is. And I try to be respectful, but here's what you did, Audrey, which is respectful. Now, this is where we'll learn from you, how you score this kind of thing with honor and dignity, is you were in a cafe hanging out, right? Doing whatever it is you guys were doing. And two, three tables over, you see Stephen Moffat.
Yes. Well, this is an interesting story. I think I told you when we had talked before that I've got a lot of social anxiety, so it's not very easy me to watch. I'm really great at interviewing people when I'm in a setting that I feel I have control over. So this was really weird, and it's where my friends came through for me. And then I just had to make sure it sounded great. We were having our mixer, our Geek Girl Authority mixer, which was, we just grabbed a bunch of tables at the Marriott. And we usually have it in this little place that we call the Grotto. It's a bunch of tables that nobody ever knows is there. We've had it 5 years in a row. And somebody was there this year, so we had to go find these other tables. And I was kind of like, oh, man. And we're just sitting there. We're having our mixer. And Stephen Moffat walks by, and he's just kind of walking, turning around in a circle, not like, I think he's looking for a table. And my friend Chris Morris says, sir, are you lost? Knowing very well it's Stephen Moffat and trying to, that was his in for a conversation. He's like, no, no, I'm fine. I'm just looking for a table and everything. And by that time, I was like, Audrey, look, look, look. And Heather Brooker says, Audrey, you should go ask him to do, because at the party, I was asking everybody like a 3-minute question and recording it. And I was like, no, I looked at this guy and he had his kid with him. It was obviously his kid. It looked just like him. I was like, he's with his family. I don't feel comfortable doing that. And I wouldn't do it. I was just too scared. And Heather just looks at me and says, go do it. And Claudia gets in there. It's like, go do it. And I'm like, I can't. Cause I got really anxious all of a sudden. And Heather says, if I go over there, will you be able to interview him? And I said, yes, I can do that. So Heather walks over and says, Mr. Moffat, I know you're really busy right now. Can Audrey ask you some questions? It'll only take 3 minutes. And he looks at her and he kind of sighs, but not like in a rude way. He just looked really tired, you know, and he's there with his kid. And he said, yes, as if, you know, he seemed like to know, like, I'm here at a fan convention. You know, this is for the fans, and this is the time where I gonna say okay. And so the question I was asking everybody, which I ask on All Kneel Before Odds, which is my other podcast where I interview people, the first question I ask is, what is your nerd origin story? And it could be anything that you're geeky about. It doesn't even have to be a genre thing. And so I said, thank you. What's your nerd origin story? And we sat down. I think you saw the picture on Instagram, Charles.
Yes.
Yeah. And we just sat down and he leaned in and he listened to me and he wasn't looking around and he was so kind that I lost some of my nervousness. And, you know, it's always about, no matter what situation you're in, being prepared to do what you do. And I was prepared. Once I sat down with him, I wasn't going to freak out. I knew that I'd be fine. So I asked him what his nerd origin story is. And he goes, well, surprisingly, it's, to be quite honest, it's Doctor Who. He said, it's also Star Trek. And then he said, and we only had 3 minutes together. And, but he told me quite a bit. He said, I was tragically bullied when I was in school and younger. And he said, and I went through every week of school. I went through 5 days knowing that at the end of those 5 days, Doctor Who was going to be waiting for me. James Kirk was going to be waiting for me on Saturday and I would be able to watch them. And then he like expanded on it. And then he talked about Sherlock, you know, that he was a voracious reader of that as well. And that he chose Doctor Who over like James Kirk or James Bond, even though he likes them a lot, because Doctor Who wasn't macho And Stephen Moffat, he said, I'm not macho. So he's, and he always tried to solve things peacefully without fighting, which is kind of a little different from Kirk. He's like, that's more. So I got this little bit of him out. Nice. Instead of, I wasn't asking about Doctor Who. I asked him about himself. And he told me that. And then he said the nicest thing to me at the end. And this is the only regret I have as an interview. I kind of talked over him because he was trying to say something nice to me. And I got nervous, if you ever say something nice to me, I'll talk over you because I don't know how to accept compliments. So I was like, yeah, I get the bullying thing because when I was in high school, I was 5'10" and I weighed 100 pounds. I couldn't gain weight because I was growing so fast. So and I was like, and blah, 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 blah. And he said, yeah, well, Karen Gillan's the same height and she turned out okay, you know? And that was it. You know, like I said, I only had 3 minutes, but I made the most of what I had with him. And for him to, you know, it was so nice to ask about him because I wanted to know about him himself, but he was able to bring his world into it. You know, he made what brought him through his anxiety, you know, what he escaped to is actually his life right now. And I find that so fascinating and inspiring. And without, speaking of that, without the help of my friends, I couldn't have done it. You know, if Heather wasn't there, I don't know if I would have been able to. I've been able to ask other actors, you know, and I don't want to say, give me another word besides lesser actors, because they're not lesser actors. He's so famous. He's so in the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know who Moffat is. That was a big one for me. Mm-hmm. And, I other people I've been okay to say, hey, can I have 3 minutes and everything? So my friends definitely helped me through that one. And he walked right through my mixer. I mean, he didn't know it, but he walked through my mixer. So
was this the Booze and Phasers party?
This was a Geek Girl Authority. We call it the Geek Girl Authority party, but this year we tagged on Booze and Phasers party as well. Yeah.
I got you.
So that's how that came about.
I heard there was a can of wine.
Oh, yes. So Brian comes over and we were at, oh God, you guys are going to hate me. We're at another party before this one. It was Bill Prady's party, the guy who does, it was a Big Bang Theory party.
Oh, wow.
And because our friends used to work for him and we get in every year, so we're assholes. Oh, can I say that? I'm sorry.
It's all right.
So Brian had stayed there, and unbeknownst to me, he had been drinking heavily. So I got done with Stephen Moffat and I texted Brian and he was on his way over. I was like, oh my God, I sent him a picture. This just happened. And so he got over and he's like, where is he? Where is he? And he turned around and Brian was, you know, feeling, he was in his cups, as he likes to say. So he had some liquid courage and he said, well, what's he drinking? Oh no. Then Stephen Moffat walks over to us and says, after the interview, and says, excuse me. And we all just dead silence. All the conversation stops. It would just all, and you can tell he's a little embarrassed, but you know, he's like, thank you for the drink, for buying you a drink. And we're like, we didn't buy you a drink. And he's like, it wasn't you. And he's like, oh, great. Oh, great. I have to go thank somebody else. He goes, please. And he's got this really big Scottish brogue. You know, he's like, please, please don't buy me a drink. This doesn't mean you need to buy me a drink. I'm just trying to find out who bought me a drink. So we immediately bought him a drink. And we tried, we wanted to buy him something funny. And at this bar, they're selling cans of wine, like wine in a can.
That sounds gross.
I know. So we saw that he was drinking white wine. So we sent him a can of white wine with a little note that says, we just wanted you to know that this is how we drink wine in America. And so he came over again and talked again and talked to all of us. My husband is a showrunner, so he got to talk to him for a while, which was really big for him. And then he went around everybody who went up to him, all his fans, he would give them a few minutes. He was very, very gracious, which is very interesting for somebody who is as big as he is, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, so that's, yeah, so a can of wine was involved.
There's a place here in Denver. It might even be the same one that had him out there. But the Infinite Monkey Theorem is the winery out here that actually does cans as well as bottles, and they're really good. And of course, hey, it's a great geeky name for a winery too. So
yes, definitely.
So, Paul, I think what we're learning is that if your first time that you go to San Diego Comic-Con, really just skip the con and go to parties.
No, I think my husband and I were on the train back home. We were like, we can officially say this year that we're douchebags because
I second that. No,
I will dig it because This is the first year, and I'm embarrassed to say this. I went to the floor. I did a bunch of geeky stuff, but I only made it to one panel this year. And it was the Brian Fuller and Stephen Moffat panel, just because we went to a bunch and, I could tell that we weren't going to be able to get in. So we did go to a bunch of parties, but it was actually kind of relaxing. And I don't know if that will ever happen again. So I was like, while it's happening,
absolutely,
I'm gonna enjoy it. Yeah.
If you feel like you got what you wanted out of San Diego Comic-Con, it doesn't matter whether you did panels or just walk the show floor or whatever.
Thank you, because I think you're absolutely right. And I do feel I had such a lovely time. You know, it was bookended, because I left Sunday morning, like at 7 a.m. We had to get back. So it was bookended. The first thing that happened when I got there was the Star Trek premiere. The last thing that happened was the Stephen Moffat thing. And I can't ask for anything more than that. It was bookended by greatness. And if you guys have time, I don't want to take up your whole show, but I still can tell you what happened inside the Star Trek premiere, which was really great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, before you do that, though, the biggest thing I heard you say and all that was you were prepared. And I saw in the photo you had your H2 or H4, whichever model you have, your digital recorder. Yes. And you were very polite. And when you got that second, when he said, sure, sit down, even though you didn't want to, you were ready.
I was ready. That's the thing. It's exactly, Charles, just be prepared. It's a big thing when you try to make your life as an actor. I was an actor for a very long time. I still am, but I don't audition anymore or anything, but there's always that element of luck, which is what I had that night, but it's 99% being prepared to be in that moment. That whole weekend, even if I was at parties or even when I was in that panel or even when I was walking the convention floor, I had two mics and my H2 thingy, ready to go, and I had one question I was asking. And so I was prepared the whole time. It takes a second to get that together. And there you go. It was in my backpack. Yeah.
Nice. Now, for this next part, listener Scott can tune out because he is not a huge fan of Star Trek. But come back, because we're going to talk about the trailers that came out of SDCC. But yeah, I think we all were excited to hear about how the premiere went. And I saw the swag bag.
Oh, geez. Are you crazy? I mean, that was insane what they gave us. And we didn't even know we are getting that. Like, there's a fence around the premiere, and at the end of the movie, they just tore down the fence and you just walk through the fence. And where it was so dark and foggy at that moment that they had a big table with all the swag on it that they had to call the audience back saying, we have stuff for you. We have gift bags. Wow. And we're like, oh, cow, holy cow. So yeah, there was like Con Director's Cut and Star Trek 2009 and Into Darkness, which is like, okay, whatever. but they had a shirt, hat, pillow. They had a great lanyard that I'll use for every con forever now. It was a really nice swag bag, Plus, when you got in, they gave you these little bracelets that I thought maybe were like identity bracelets. But when we sat down with our friend, Mike and his friends, I was like, no, these hook up to something. I can tell that there's a chip in these bracelets and they hook, and I couldn't figure out what they hooked up to. And so, but you wanted to, did you want to talk more about the swag bag?
No. Tell your story. Okay. Just tell it how you tell it. So, the guys will ask because they need to know.
Yeah. Just interrupt me if I'm talking too fast or too long. So we get in there, we have these bracelets on, we're sitting down, and I realize it's going to be 3 hours because we got three more hours of light. Everybody gets free Subway. They've got free ice cream, free soda. Everything is just free, right?
If you roll with Audrey, you roll free. How this goes. Unless it's Gandalf, then it's like $5,000.
Exactly, right? And so outside the fit, and I think there's about, I think it was like 3,000 people that were there. It was correct me, I may be wrong, you'll have to look that up, but it was packed. And then of course there's this huge reserve section up front for, important people, I guess. And outside the fence, they had the red carpet, all the stars were coming and everything. And so I'm looking at our bracelets and I still tell everybody, I know these are connected to something. And one of the things that they were doing is the San Diego Symphony was playing the entire score live. Wow. So throughout all the action scenes, when the music's building, you can actually look over to the symphony and they're doing it live. They're doing everything live.
Nice.
And what do you call it? Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And they actually had a choir behind the curtain because they couldn't fit them on stage, doing all these vocalizations that were in the score as well. So anyway, we sit there for 3 hours, and they start handing out, and there are these uncomfortable chairs. They start handing out these cushions like you would sit on at a baseball game for free. Again, free. That said Star Trek Beyond. So that was our first piece of swag. And then the lights go down, and all of a sudden all these fog machines come out. And I was like, oh, this is our bracelets are synced to the orchestra, I bet. And that's what I thought it was. And so the symphony starts playing, and then all of a sudden our bracelets start doing like this little light show. It was very close. It was very Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know? And they start doing a laser show, you know, like in the fog. And it's actually quite beautiful with the music. And then all of a sudden there's fireworks over the inlet or the water. And these aren't like just regular fireworks. These are like fireworks that you would see in a major city on 4th of July. It was just like incredible. We were like, oh my gosh. And they're kind of all in sync with where the symphony was playing, and then the laser light show and your bracelets going crazy. And that lasted for about 20 minutes. It was insane. And then lights go down and Conan O'Brien comes on the stage and he's introducing the show, and he makes a fabulous joke, which is, okay, tomorrow all the Star Trek Beyond posters and billboards are coming down because a whole budget went into that fireworks show. True. And so his job was to introduce everybody one by one. So the whole cast came out one by one and said something.
Of course they did.
Yeah, which was amazing. And was everyone there? Every single person was there, even Idris Elba and Sophia Boutella. And,
Red shirt number three, he showed up.
Yeah, red shirt number three was on stage, and he got stabbed by the violinist, you know. Imagine that. What's his name? Zachary Quinto, who plays Spock, after they only talked for about 2 minutes each because they were running out of time. He takes the microphone and he gave a little dedication to Leonard Nimoy. So they talked about that, and it was very sweet. Of course, the elephant in the room, or the elephant in the premiere, is that Anton Yelchin is not there because he had just died a month ago. And so then all of a sudden, J.J. Abrams walks on stage, you know, because he didn't direct it, but he's the producer and everything. So he comes on and he says, okay, and he brings it up. There's something missing. And this was one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced, guys. He talked about Anton. It was very emotional, but you could tell the cast was visibly holding it in. And then he says that Anton's parents are sitting out with you tonight. They're here watching this movie. And we're going to have a moment of silence. And, you know, we've all been through moments of silence, you know, but they're never a minute long, you know. And there's usually, and if they're long, there's always someone coughing or sneezing. There's rustling and stuff like that. This was a full minute. J.J. Abrams said, let's have a moment of silence. It was a full minute. And so you have 3,000 people there who love the franchise and love Star Trek. There was not a sneeze, a cough, rustling. It was dead silence. And, you know, I was moved to tears. You know, I have a 23-year-old, so, you know, they're thinking about losing a child and his parents are there. And of course, there's all these Trekkies everywhere. And people started crying. It was incredibly moving. And then that was over, and the orchestra started playing, and they started the film, and it was fun. I liked it. It was much better than Into Darkness. And it ended, and we got our swag bags, and we went and bought Mike McCafferty a bunch of drinks for getting us into the thing. So that's what happened during the premiere, which before the premiere, which I thought was like, you know, it's a once in a lifetime thing. First of all, seeing the cast, seeing Conan introduce him, seeing, you know, J.J. Abrams speak, and then that moment of silence is something I'll never forget. You know, just feeling this energy, having 3,000 people feel the same energy at the same time is something I don't think I've ever experienced. You know, so it was really, really special. Have you guys seen the movie?
We have. Well, I have.
I have. Yeah.
Okay.
I had plans too, and then things went awry the last couple of days.
Well, I need to go see it again because, like, when you're in a situation where you're at a nerd con, you know, and you're at a premiere. So that kind of changes what you think about the film. So of course, sure. I'm on this high that I loved it so much. So I want to go see it again and settle into what I think about it.
Definitely felt like it was the, it's the best of the three since the reboot. Enjoyed the first one, but this one feel like, yeah, you didn't have to deal with all the origin stuff or the beginning stuff. And you got to just jump right into the character relationships.
Which I think I completely agree with you and not giving away anything of the plot to those of you who haven't seen it. But one thing that was very enjoyable to go along with what you just said is that there was a lot of scenes where Kirk wasn't the main character in the scene. There was a lot of Spock and McCoy scenes where you had never in this, you know, reboot, this Kelvin timeline, you haven't seen their relationship, and they were very well done, and their chemistry together was absolutely wonderful. And I was like, oh, I want more of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I liked it.
It kind of felt a little bit like it was New Trek 3 buddy cop film with those two.
Yeah, wasn't it? Because it was they did have a lot of fun lines. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Buddy cop.
It was tremendous. It was their chemistry was very noticeable and very enjoyable. So I agree with that completely. It was probably one of my favorite parts of this film.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely what stuck out with me. And I will say that, you know, in the first trailer where everybody got mad at the use of the Beastie Boys song, including myself, that I see, without giving anything away, I see why they used it. And I liked it.
Yeah.
Well, that was, you know, without giving too much away, the funny part about that is that, you know, you get within a few moments of a certain scene in the film and it all clicks and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And then you're happy about it. You're like, okay.
I accept this. And I think everybody had it in the audience. I was seeing what you're talking about right now. It was a very audible, where everybody was just like, yeah. So.
Now, the talk is that the next film is going to have a return of Chris Hemsworth as George Kirk.
I think it's been confirmed. It's just not been confirmed how they're going to do it. You know, is it going to be another alternate timeline? Did George Kirk get caught in that whatever bubble vortex thing was when the Kelvin went into it, or is it a dream, or is it another alternate reality?
Or is he going to play Thor? Yeah. I mean, you know,
I was interviewing somebody about that who's a giant Marvel fan. It's actually the guy that does, which is not Marvel. He does the Fat Man on Batman thing. I was asking a serious question about that, and he came up with this whole thing about Thor coming into the universe and what's going to happen. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
I was like, can we be serious for a second?
So have we had to step away for a second? Have we transitioned into trailers?
No, I was still going on and on about Star Trek.
Booze and phasers, everybody.
Yeah, I think we're done though, right? I think I brought us a nice end.
Yes.
Good.
For sure.
Good.
Well,
the first trailer I happened to see was Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I'm gonna give you guys a chance because Ibbit and Chris and Klotz haven't talked as much as Audrey and I. So one of you can start talking about your experience with that and what you think, and we'll discuss it.
It was
all right. Well,
I'll jump in.
Everybody will jump in.
So okay. Normally we have the problem where nobody wants to go.
Not everyone.
Three want to go. That's awesome.
Right. I have seniority. I could go at any minute. I'm 47.
By all means, Grandpa, go ahead.
At least he's not waving his podcast awards in our face.
Hell, the trailer! It was too loud. No, it felt like
Teal Deer.
It felt like what you know, what we wanted BVS to be. It feels like a good, solid, complete introduction to this character. I think that Gal Gadot is Gadot is the T silent?
Gadot. The last I heard was Gadot.
It's not silent.
So as long as she hasn't changed it since then, we're good.
But for anyone that's a theater major, you can't help but say Gadot.
Right. Waiting for Gal Gadot. No, I mean, it looks like a great, solid introduction to this character. And I think... It doesn't feel like they're trying to jam. And again, this is just based on one trailer, but it doesn't feel like they're trying to jam a lot of stuff to complicate the Wonder Woman mythos into one movie. They're not introducing, you know, a bunch of other superheroes that have to fight along with it. They're not introducing multiple villains that she has to deal with. It seems like it's going to be kind of a her, Chris Pine, a villain, maybe two villains, but a good, solid, manageable story.
To me,
it kind of harkens back to the first Captain America film a little bit, where it's like, all right, everybody kind of knows who this character is, and we're going to show an origin story or like something that resembles an origin story in a certain period of time, you know, and you get to kind of, you get your little bit of a, like an era film, you know, and you'll get a little bit of the background on this character that's going to play very prominently in another film very shortly and just was in another film, you know? So, I think kind of masterfully the trailer illustrates that without like it seeming completely derivative or anything like that. All I know is, and we can get to each trailer as well, you know, the other trailers that came out as well, but all I know is I came out of, you know, the trailers hitting thinking, well, DC / Warner Brothers is really on point with this trailer game for Comic-Con. Like, they really nailed it with this presentation between Justice League one, this one, and, you know, Suicide Squad as well. And it really relieved a lot of pressure I was feeling about, like, how, you know, these films were going to pan out. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens in the next year or two here for the DC films, because they look really promising. Of course, I was one of the few people who actually enjoyed BVS, but like I see a marked change in direction, and I think that's fantastic. And I think it looks like it's going to, oh man, this has potential, some serious potential. It looks like it could be a lot of fun.
I liked it. I saw it last night, and you know, it opens with Chris Pine washing up on the beach, right? And and she's there, and I couldn't help myself. She looked at him. I went, "He looking like a man," which is a reference to Mad TV, right? And then the next line, he goes, "What?" She goes, "You're a man." And that's, I said, "He looking like a man." And he goes, "Why do I look like one?" That's awesome. That's funny. So it's going to be
her first time seeing a man, right?
Probably.
Yeah, she'd been
probably
on Themyscira until then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I everything that I liked that they got right about Wonder Woman in BVS, they've just amplified it in this, and it just it's a total package, this movie, and it's not trying to put in eight disparate different storylines and condense it into one 3-hour thing.
Excuse me, let me just take
stay
my
on point.
Back before you
stay on target. Stay on target.
That movie is always a target. Anyway,
use the force, Chris. Resist.
But I think for me, out of all of the previews, not just the DC previews, but this, the most on point thing that SDCC did this year as a whole, was those trailers premiered in their halls, and then we had them within 24 hours. And it goes back to what we were talking about last year.
Yes.
It's okay to make it exclusive. You got to get, you know, I understand you got to sell the tickets and get people there, but I think of all the people that can't be there, and you stop the pirating, you stop the cell phone, the shaky image that distorts the view of your movie by being released to the internet that way. And we're getting them within 24 hours. I couldn't have been more.
Yeah, and I think what they're learning too at SDCC is that having the trailer released right after the panel is not going to hinder who comes to the panel. People are there to experience the actors and the director and the feeling of being in a room with 5,000 people seeing that trailer. There's still going to people be sleeping in line to watch the trailer. So you may as well, you know, go on that buzz and release it right away. I thought that was really smart.
I think that was pretty much what I said last year.
Oh, really?
About it. Well, and it's interesting that you point that out, Chris. That makes 1 year for us, because our very first recording of Breaking the Panel was right after Ant-Man had come out and right after SDCC. And they were crying about how people were stealing the Suicide Squad trailer and putting it up on the web, and they keep taking it down. And we made that point, basically, because you're right. And Audrey, it's good to hear you say that as well, because you were there, or at least you at the con. And and Chris, I agree. I'm glad that they brought it back.
You know, and to provide a little like of my anecdotal experience with it. I wasn't paying attention to Comic-Con coverage. I figured I'd, because I, when something like this happens, I usually just let it all do its thing, and then at the end of it, I'll go through and pick out what I really want to pay attention to, you know? The moment-to-moment thing just isn't really my bag, but I totally get why other people do it. But I've been playing insane amounts of Ark lately. And, you know, it's this survival game and it's completely immersive and there's dinosaurs and all this crazy stuff. And the people I'm playing with, all of a sudden, one of them goes, did you see the Justice League trailer? And everybody I was playing with, like 5-6 people, are all like, no. And we all stop what we're doing in this fully immersive digital world to go see the Justice League trailer. And what ends up happening is we spend the next hour, maybe longer, checking out virtually every trailer from Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, because they're, first of all, they're so phenomenal. Like, the DC ones were so good that we were like, oh, well, what's this? And, you know, obviously YouTube does a really good job with Google's Google Foo of showing you other SDCC, you know, trailers. And so, like, we watch all the DC ones, and then we watch this next one. And then, you know, we jump to the new Kong movie and some other stuff. And, yeah. And, you know, without taking a complete side route, that movie looks amazing, and I'm really excited. You know, so yeah. There's all kinds of trailers like that. And it's like, that was kind of our point a year ago, was like, if absolutely premiere it at a big con like that, show it to your hardcore fans, let them have that experience that Audrey was just talking about, because that is what people go to cons for. But then share it with the world, because the buzz will just carry it, you know, and that's exactly what happened. And by releasing those trailers like right away, you get to piggyback on the momentum of other films, even films that are completely outside of your genre, you know. So like, I would never have thought that I would have went from watching, you know, a Justice League trailer to a Wonder Woman trailer to a Kong Skull Island trailer. Yet I did, and yet I was very excited about everything that I saw. I saw some other trailers too, you know, and I was just like, this is great. And it really got me amped up for the, you know, what I got exposed to because of that. And that's what you want to do. You want to like take advantage of that buzz and like just be there and then let people kind of just bump into you, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, absolutely. I feel completely vindicated by that relatively big change, you know?
No, you go ahead, Chris.
All the DC trailers that I saw, I'm ready to see this direction now. I can get behind. I'm gonna go ahead and forget as much as I can about those first two and just go for it, because everything that I feel people that had problems with those first two movies have been asking for have now been addressed. And unless the only thing that we're getting is what was in the trailers, which would be a bad, big disappointment. But I feel like there's new life into these properties, and not necessarily just showing now through Suicide Squad, because my previous apprehension with that movie is, so you're going to show that only the bad guys can have fun in this universe. But now it looks like everybody's going to have fun.
That was, it was very clear from the Justice League trailer, particularly with the, with his scene with, Flash and he's like, Barry Allen.
Yeah.
I'm in. wait, what? Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Justice League.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the Icky Thump, the White Stripes theme played?
I thought it was great.
I did too. I did too. Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, it's not that.
I didn't notice.
Usually, like with a superhero music, it's kind of like a little more dramatic and everything. And instead, you got that great beat. Mm. I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, honestly, that's something that Warner Brothers marketing has, to me, gotten right in the last year or so. I cannot remember if it started with Suicide Squad or if it's before. I just noticed it was Suicide Squad, but putting on the rock songs, the different songs for the different trailers, giving them a certain feel, they've been doing really, really well with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny because we talked about the Star Trek Beyond trailer with Sabotage and how it was it was jarring, right? Yeah. Like that trailer came out and you're like, what is this? Like, you know, if you're
Sabotage.
You know, if you're a Trek fan, you're like, what is this? Like, you get
it's also, why are we using it again? Because it was, if you haven't seen, it was used in Star Trek 2009. Uh-huh. So it's like, what? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I get J.J. Abrams likes Beastie Boys.
Yeah. Big fan of Beastie Boys, yeah.
No, sleep to Andromeda 9.
But obviously, you know, in that case, it's kind of tied into part of the film. But like,
exactly.
But it with these other film trailers, it brings this energy, you know, like those Suicide Squad trailers. If that movie's not that great, those trailers were still really fun and it's going to get people to show up. You know, hopefully it is great. You know, I've kind of been a bit of a naysayer on it for a while, but I kind of would like to see it be good. I'd like to be wrong, because as much as I like to pretend I like to be right all the time.
You're no rock on the podcast.
You know, absolutely. That a good rock song like that brings a lot of energy. It gets some excitement up. People recognize it and they're like, ooh. You know, I recognize that song, even if they don't know what it is off the top of their head. So, I think that was fantastic. And it really sets a tone, you know,
like,
that song is a fun song, you know, so but
they do need to watch how many songs in a row they lift from, you know, the Wayne's World soundtrack.
No, that's the thing. They're planning on re-releasing the Blu-ray extended cut of Wayne's World, and they're subliminally marketing it in every other movie that they're putting out.
Oh, my goodness.
So Ibit and
Master Plan.
Yeah,
I would totally watch another Austin Powers.
Tia Carrera should have been the Katana then.
but Ibit and Wisdom, you two are very disappointed in BVS. How do you feel about Justice League and the tone that the trailer is taking?
Love the interaction between Ben Affleck and Barry Allen and Bruce Wayne. I think that right there, just seeing that scene is kind of
A great scene.
It really is. It sells me on the whole notion. I mean, I'm kind of bummed it's not Grant Gustin, but I'll easily and quickly get over that if I don't know the name of the new actor.
Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller, right.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt you, Brian, here. I just want to say, though, that that trailer relieved for me my apprehension about that. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot better now, and I'm actually a little excited to see somebody else take a whack at it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Still a little awkward, but
I felt like he came off more clean in this than he did in the convenience store footage in BVS.
Yes.
Well, his hair's
cut. Yeah, he's less grimy, but I don't know.
That's the big difference, and kind of the thing you want in your Barry Allen is kind of this clean cut, you know, snot-nosed kid who's not living on the streets or something. But just seeing that interaction between the two of them and feeling like, all right, that could have easily been one of those things that I felt was missing from the first film and I from BVS, which was those interactions between the characters, the interactions between Ben Affleck and between Bruce Wayne and Wonder Woman or with Superman, and just seeing that humanization of those characters in that trailer is already enough to really rope me in.
Yeah. Now my wife, who's a non-geek, but she does go to these movies with me and she does enjoy some of it. The first thing she saw with the Flash was she goes, oh, they make him think as fast as he runs. And she's walked through me watching Grant Gustin's Flash and she thinks it's just cheesetastic. She hates it. So that was something that impressed her. Just that scene where he throws the batarang and all of a sudden every time freezes and he's turning and he's looking and he's turning. And she instantly picked up on what they were trying to convey and loved it. And I was like, yep. They're really taking a really good step forward with this. The line, I love that they had him give the speech earlier in the trailer about there's an enemy coming and this and that. And so he gives it again here at the Flash, there's an enemy coming. I'm in.
Yep.
And that's what sold me on Ezra was when he goes, really? And Ezra stands there and his face, you can tell he's thinking too fast and he's trying to get the words out. And of course the line is, I need friends. Yeah. It's the delivery of it though. I was like, okay, it's going to be a little awkward. It's kind of like seeing your ex with the new whatever boyfriend, girlfriend.
Right.
You know, situation. But at the same time, like, okay, I can dig it. I can dig that you're going to bring a great performance.
In this case, it's an open relationship and you can see them both.
Yeah.
This is true. Audrey, do you have thoughts on Justice League?
I loved it. I loved funny Ben Affleck. I liked the, I know more about Marvel than I do DC, but I kind of felt like, which is okay with me. I kind of felt like he's assembling the Avengers, you know, basically with the Justice League. With
kind of, yes.
Yeah, but no, I'm great. And I, you know, and this is what I'd be curious to hear from you guys, your DC fan, you guys that are DC fans, is what do you think about Aquaman? Because I thought he was like such a good foil to, like, say, Ben Affleck and stuff like that, you know, because it was just so serious and everything. And I thought he looked good. Is that too big of a departure for you guys from what you read in the comics? Are you guys excited?
I like that. No, I like the different take on Aquaman. Yeah. That's what I like. And it's not a completely different take that we've seen before. Visually, it is stark difference from anything we've ever seen.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, but personality wise, from what I've seen so far and what I've read, it's not a complete departure from what there has been precedence for. But it is going to be neat to take a look at this aspect of it a little more deeper.
So. I've always liked the Batman Brave and the Bold Aquaman. And no, seriously, I mean, just that bravado and the he's really big, right? He's like twice as big as everybody around him. He's just this big, beefy, you know, strong guy. And he's huge bravado. But there's another Aquaman. I cannot think of the cartoon or animated series I saw him in. But the one where the Aquaman has lost a hand. You know, that darker, grittier Aquaman. Mm-hmm. I like him as well. Who's also big and totally bold.
This guy looks like he's been living underwater in a conch shell for a while.
I mean, he looks like he's been Aquaman.
I think that's desperately needed to make the character have, you know, resonance with a modern audience. Because unfortunately, he's one of those characters that just, like, if he's presented traditionally, he's just very lackluster. You know, he's very, like, unimpressive. I mean, like, his powers and what he can do is all impressive, but like his costuming and his, you know, he just has a reputation for being like, oh, you could talk to fish, like, you know,
they would say that in the
how can that be, you know, when you're fighting like Lex Luthor in Metropolis or something like that, you know what I mean? And so
you're absolutely right. I mean, because like in the Wonder Woman trailer, I mean, there's so much mythology surrounding her, you know, and I felt like it was the first time I'd seen Aquaman where it was very grand. He seemed to have a history and this mythology around him. Like, he comes from the sea. You can almost smell it on him. You know, it's like very Poseidon and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I thought it was the first time for me. Like I said, I'm not a reader of DC Comics, but it was the first time where it was just like, wow, I want to know about that guy. And not just because he's being played by Jason Momoa.
It doesn't hurt.
I love that he found a character who can out-serious Batman.
I know, right? You know? That's funny. Yeah.
Because because Ben Affleck was kind of a little flippant with him. And he's like, speak. And that was it. They just grabbed him and throws against the wall. It's awesome. Best line in the trailer for me was at the end with Cyborg. The animation or the CGI on Cyborg is really good. Mm-hmm. And I was a little disappointed that he showed very little of him. You know, he had like one line in the trailer. Right. But he looks at Batman and says, I've heard of you. I didn't think you were real. But the best line was, he goes, I'm real when it's necessary. I loved that line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder the only, and it's not a knock against the trailer, but it was the only kind of thing that I was, when I saw the trailer, was we've seen the box for man, so now the mother box that the knights were burying in the woods. So we've seen the ring for the realm of man. So now, or the box for the realm of man. Now, are we gonna get the box for the realm of the elves and so on and so forth? But.
Gotcha.
Unboxed rule of the man.
that's that ornate box that they're bearing.
Yeah.
This feels like an excellent time to bring up the fact that John Noble played Denethor.
Thank you. Denethor is killing me.
It was going to bother me if we didn't get that right.
Yeah.
It was going to bother the people who were going to send us emails. That's
See, you shouldn't have corrected it because we need the emails. BTP at GenesisTeamup.
Send the emails anyways. But, like, I mean, please, flambaste us here. Like, get on us. But, like, I had to correct that as a Tolkien fan. I had to.
I had to make amends. I'm sorry.
So we're running along, but that's okay. I knew it was going to happen. I mean, this is a great experience. I mean, I've never been to SDCC, so to hear your experience, Audrey, was amazing and cool. And to hear the level of douchebaggery parties and all that. I don't think that's douchebag. I think that's awesome. You used the word. I'm just saying.
No, I totally accept it.
I like hearing that.
I totally accept it. We did feel like douchebags, but at the same time, we were like, you know, 10 years ago,
it's awesome
10 years
life.
Ago at our first Comic-Con, did we ever think that we'd be going to parties and, right. and stuff like that. So, and like I said, it was bookended by fabulousness. So,
and so that's, I, what I'll say is that's all cool. I like it. I only have two more trailers written down. So if you guys have any extra, let's talk about it. But Legion, there's the first trailer for FX's Legion.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Anybody watch
it? Good. Oh, yeah, it's good. I like this. I'm trying to think what movie that was that, I really liked it. They did that same thing, those jump cuts and that shaky cam.
Spice World?
Yes. Spice
World. Yes. Which even in Spice World, like a Legion, had a Bollywood dancing. There you go.
My wife says, oh, that's very frantic. I'm like, yeah, it's supposed to be. And I filled her in with what little I can remember about he's Xavier's son. And isn't he schizophrenic?
Yes. Yes. Oh,
yeah. Okay, I said that right. So I told her, I say schizophrenic is you. This is going on. So they're giving you that feeling in this trailer. Yeah, I thought
definitely.
Mm-hmm. I just like seeing the guy from Downton Abbey. Well, no, it's just like he looks so different to me in this, and it's like, oh, that's cool. He's not just a doughy British guy. No offense to any Brits out there. I love you very much.
Doctor Strange. Well,
I was gonna say, speaking of Brits.
Yes.
Talk about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, great. Finally getting to see more of the costume, more of, you know, throwing the cape on and having it kind of, you know, magically.
That's actually my favorite shot of the whole trailer is him putting that cape on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, because, you know, again, we're talking about a character that is a little bit dated sometimes, a little bit corny and a little bit niche, you know. And then, like, the presentation, it was just like, no, this is awesome. I can't wait to see how this pans out. And then he does the cape scene, and I'm like, and he's a badass, too?
Yeah.
Yes. I was completely about it in that moment. I'm really, really excited now. Because I was a little nervous with the first trailer there. I was like, oh, it's so early, and it looks a little corny. And now I'm
but people said that about Ant-Man too, and Marvel can do the same thing with this that they did with Ant-Man, turn him into a household name.
Well, I'm lucky that one of my comics contributor to Geek Girl Authority, his favorite comic character ever happens to be Doctor Strange. So,
Matt Key,
and like he's been cosplaying as Doctor Strange for 15 years before this was even announced. And so his breakdown of the trailer has been really interesting. And of course, he's incredibly excited for it. He was said that rarely does it happen in the comics that anyone invades the Sanctorum.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it looks like that's going to happen. You see that in the film. Mads Mikkelsen, that's how you say his name, Mads Mikkelsen, looks absolutely amazing. And I don't know if you guys know this with the magic. Every time they showed the magic, it was actually runes. It was like in the shape of runes, ancient runes, which I thought was... What Matt did for the site is he basically watched it in slow motion and took a bunch of, you know, and so he was able to pick up on a lot of that stuff, and I'm excited for it. Did you guys think it was a little too Inception-y looking as far as the special effects? I thought it was neat.
Yeah.
Dude, I cut my teeth on Dark City when I was a teenager, so that's my kind of jam right there.
It has to be, you know, for what Strange is. And, you know, I mean, the guy does like astral projection and stuff. I mean, it's got to get a little wacky, you know.
And I think it removes any question as to which Infinity Stone the Eye of Agmato is. But that's I was also excited to see the relationship between him and Baron Mordo, because I'm almost looking more forward more to Doctor Strange 2 than Doctor Strange 1, because I want to see this turn. I want to see these friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, because eventually they're not going to do their giant sized team up. Yeah. What did I do? Nice. See what I did?
It kind of feels like it kind of feels like this is a almost a throwaway bad guy. Like, we're not quite sure if this movie's going to do well, so we're not going to use a big bad guy because we might want to save him for later. Mm-hmm. Although I think this movie is going to do phenomenally
well. You know,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, the fact that they're not using Dormammu, for example.
Yeah.
Right. I see.
Or any of the or you could use any of the astral plane creatures. You know, you could use a lot of stuff, and they're using one we haven't heard much of. But I am excited about everything else. And I'm like, okay, fine. You know, throw us a B League bad guy, and then we'll see that relationship change, like you guys said, with him.
You know, betrayal is such an interesting thing to watch on screen. Mm-hmm. So if that does come in the next movie, it's just going to make it all the stakes all the more high. And it's just going to be more satisfying for the audience to see what happens with Mordor. Mm-hmm. I'm back on Tolkien time here.
I did write down one more trailer, the new Harry Potter film, Fantastic Beasts, and Where to Find Them.
I was so neat because, you know, you're getting out. We're so attached to Harry and Hermione and Ron, you know, that we're out in what happens after you go to school, which I thought was really neat. This is after they become adults, and as far as the people in the film, not those three specifically. And then you're getting the American, what's going on in America, you know, 100 years ago. And it's just, I loved it. I mean, it's not going to fill the void in my soul where Harry Potter was, but I think, you know, going back to the wizarding world is going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
It definitely has a different tone because it's not the kids. It's not the school. Mm-hmm. It took me a minute to get around that because, I don't know, I'm just used to a certain presentation. I guess, from Harry Potter movies,
I think there is as an audience member, at least that's how I felt, there is a constant level of discovery as you discovered magic with the children. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're constantly in awe of, oh my gosh, they can do that, look at this world. And now you're in the world. You already know everything. So I think they're trying to present that to you through the one, I don't know the guy's character, who's the muggle or the nomad, as they call him in America. They call him nomadges. So he's going to be discovering the magic of everybody else, you know.
Right.
A great moment is when the actor that I know him from a short-lived show called Man Up, he's the kind of the sidekick of the magician. And he goes, they're clapping. It's, oh, I wouldn't be a sorcerer. It just cracked me up. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good movie.
Dan Fogler is right.
That's it. Yep. That's him. Yeah. Why so stingy with the fruit? But that's a whole Man Up thing. Sorry. All right. Anything else before we get out of here, ladies and gentlemen? I guess not.
Awkward silence.
Audrey, tell us where we can find that Doctor Strange breakdown that Matt wrote. I think I lost Audrey.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, you can find it at Geek Girl Authority. You can search on the site. It looks like we lost our microphone or something. I'm not sure what's going on there. You can also find Audrey every other week on Booze and Phasers, which is one of our new favorite shows here at Giant Size Team Up. That is on GiantSizeTeamUp.com and on GeekGirlAuthority.com as well. And very soon it'll be on Blog Talk Radio. We're finalizing a few details there. Glad to have them aboard, Claudia Dolph and Heather Brooker, who are also doing amazing things. Heather Brooker was just on the pink carpet for the world debut of Bad Moms and got to interview Mila Kunis and a bunch of other people for her podcast, Motherhood in Hollywood. So Ibbot, you've got Coverville going on. Mm-hmm. And
Morning Stream, Film Sec, From the Helicarrier, and The Deuce.
Deuce.
And much more. But start at Coverville.com and that's where you find me.
So keep checking it out. I'm still working on the guests for next week. They haven't responded back, but it will be out. We'll be having a show next week.
I think
week.
We need to hear from Travis Jones.
You want to bring Travis Jones back? Are you ready for your thrashing? He had to leave the country. He was so angry. He had to leave the country. So, but yeah, we'll be back. Love Audrey that she was on, and we just lost her right here at the end, but she's still listening. So thank you, Audrey, for being on. I look forward to seeing seeing you at Dragon Con this year. We'll be doing lots of great things together. And go check out Booze and Phasers. Go check out the Geek Girl Authority shows, which Neil Before Odd is one of my favorite ones over there. She does geek interviews, and it's amazing. And we'll be back next week. So check us out at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. You can get all episodes there. You can get the SpeakPipe. Email us at btp@giantsizeteamup.com. We want to hear from you. We'll be back next week.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.